broadcasting from Dublin, Ireland, and around the world on TalkingBrawlsMMA.com and iTunes. You're listening to Ireland's premier mixed martial arts show, the Talking Brawls Mixed Martial Arts Podcast.
This is Mike Dolce,
Ian McCall, James Little Evil Pulver,
the Crippler Chris Leaving,
Frank the Legend Shamrock.
Buffer, your voice of the UFC Octagon. And now, we are live at Talking Brawls.
Back from Las Vegas and back in your ears, the Talking Brawls MMA.com podcast has returned for the first time in, I think, 2 weeks. I think we did a live show last time with Figo Farrell. No Andrew today, I'm on my own. So let's get things kicked off. Obviously a great performance over in Vegas from Conor McGregor, disposing of Dustin Poirier in the very first round, doing exactly what he said he was going to do, and finishing the diamond in the first round. Okay, so before we get things kicked off, obviously you can catch us on Twitter at Talking Brawls and at TBMMADOTCOM, and I'm at Niall McGrath 4, so hit us up with any questions, anything you want answered, anyone you want in the show, anything like that, make yourselves known. Also, obviously on the website, TalkingBrawlsMMA.com, some of the guys had some great coverage while I was in Vegas, trying to get some video stuff done. I had a few problems with the DSLRs, but we'll leave that for another day. So let's get things kicked off. Obviously, a big lineup on the show today. It's going to be more of a review looking back at the last couple of weeks' action. So first up, we're going to be joined by Mike Bond from MMAJunkie.com and USA Today to talk about Tarek Saffiedine versus Rory McDonald. Obviously, a lot of Irish interest there with Paddy Houlihan on the card. Paddy coming up short. Started really well in the first round against Salatis, but then, you know, probably did lose the second round and third round to Salatis. So we'll be looking back at that card. And obviously a big night for Rory McDonald. Rory McDonald getting his title shot. Dana White announced that last night after he finished Tarek Saffiedine in the third round. A very impressive performance from Rory. Tarek didn't really get going at all, but Rory, you know, finished him in violent fashion. One of the first guys, I believe, to stop Tarek Saffiedine. Also on the show today, we'll be looking back at Sweden. More Irish interest in Sweden last weekend. We had Kyle Pendered, obviously, against Gaston Umalatov. Kyle coming up with a win. Shaded it, in my estimation, 2-1. Really, really close fight. Could have even possibly been a draw, but Kyle got the victory. I think the forward pressure in the third round really did play a deciding factor. Kyle did try to get things going where Gaston didn't. So good win for Kyle. And later on in that card, obviously, Gunnar Nelson with his first loss. A big, big surprise for me. Anyway, I was sure Gunnar was going to win that fight. But what a performance from Rick Story. Kept Gunnar on the back foot all night and did take a decision victory in my estimation. I don't know how one of the judges scored that. A split decision. Pretty incredible stuff again from the Swedish Mixed Martial Arts Federation. Some of the refereeing wasn't great either. There was a couple of very late stoppages. We saw Nicholas Backstrom against Mike Wilkinson, where it could have been stopped a little bit earlier. Wasn't as bad as the Max Holloway one. Max Holloway against Akira Kourasani. That like, Akira had, you know, 3 to 4, 5 shots extra than he should have. Terrible refereeing. Poor stoppage. Poor attendance over there as well. I'd just like to point that out. There was 10,000. We'll be talking about that later on the show, with Sebastian Wendel Martinez, who was going to join us from MMANut.se in Sweden. Very, very good website. Check that out also. So we're going to talk a lot about that today, the Swedish card, and a lot about the Canadian card. So let's get things kicked off, and let's welcome into the show Mike Bond of MMAJunkie.com and USA Today. Mike, how are you first, my friend? I believe you're just back from Halifax.
Yeah, I'm very well. I got to see a new Canadian city. I've never been that far east in Canada as Halifax before, so it was a nice experience. I really like the city, actually. I think it's one of my favorites in Canada now.
Cool. We must make the trip out there someday. Obviously, Irishman Paddy Houlihan was fighting on the card. But just obviously, it was the first trip to Atlantic in Nova Scotia and Halifax, Canada. How was it perceived by the fans there, Mike?
The vibe I got was really good. I mean, when when the UFC goes to cities like this, it's obviously the first time. There's not really much else going on in Halifax. It's not like they have like any big baseball teams, basketball teams. They do have some local hockey, but it's not like the NHL level. So really, they don't have a ton of sporting events to support. So when the UFC comes into town, even though it wasn't the most loaded card in the world, the people getting behind stuff like that. So tickets sold really well. The crowd was awesome for most of the night. They got a little tired towards the end, which is understandable because I think the main event ended at like 1:59 a.m. local time or something like that. So, I mean, it's understandable they died out a little bit, but the crowd was awesome, and I think the UFC should and will go back to Halifax again in the future for sure.
Definitely, obviously, the home of TJ Grant. We'll speak a little bit about TJ in a couple of moments' time. But very strong performances from the Canadian guys. I think it was 7-9 the Canadian fighters went on the card. We have the TUF Nations guys, the alumni from that show this season. We've Teodoro, we've Owen Mercier, and we've Chad Laprise. You know, how good are these guys, Mike? Because, you know, especially Owen Mercier looked really impressive with that judo-style submission.
Yeah, I mean, they all three of those guys looked really good. It's hard to say. It's like Oben Mercier had a great submission, but Jake Lindsay obviously isn't the most proven talent at the UFC level. So these guys, and then Bruno Santos for Theodoro, he's a grinder and stuff, but these guys, pretty much what I'm saying is none of them are world beaters or anything. Yeah. So they're all winnable fights they're getting at this point. So, which is understandable. They're still all very young in the UFC. It was all their second fights. They're fighting in Canada, so I could see them getting a bit of favorable matchmaking in that sense. But they do have talent. I mean, between the three of those guys, I think there's only one loss. Laprise and Theodoro are both undefeated. Right. They have the talent. They're all training at the right place, spending time at TriStar, all are very motivated. So I think they could be, they're guys that I could see being in the UFC for a while. I think it's too early to tell if they're going to be championship level talents or even contenders, but I mean, they're guys that are going to be welcomed addition on shows in Canada for years to come, I would imagine.
And obviously from an Irish perspective, we Paddy Hulan fighting on the card against, what's the guy's name? Salades, I think.
Chris Kalaides.
Obviously, Chris took the fight in 5 days' notice, and a lot of people, including myself, you know, we rate Paddy very highly in Europe here, and he's a lot of people thought, you know, he was going to take the flyweight division by storm. You know, how good is Chris Kalaides?
He's a pretty good talent. I mean, there's a couple things you can say about this fight. Obviously, Kalaides looked really good. I'm surprised he made the weight. He said he did not look confident when he got on the scale there on Friday. But he's a talented guy. I mean, he works hard. He trains with TJ Grant. He's at the same gym. Obviously, TJ kind of helped him prepare on the days that he could. And he's a good fighter. He just had all that. Like, the vibe of the crowd was so behind him. There was just so much going in his favor there. And for as far as Holohan, I mean, he looked great in that first round, but I'll tell you something that maybe your Irish fans especially will be interested in hearing. Just behind the scenes, I heard from like some people who are cage side, stuff like that, that Aisling Daly was not a corner, like was not up to par in her cornerman services or corner woman services. She was giving very little advice in between rounds. She wasn't yelling much in terms of in-fight advice, and even like she wasn't holding the ice bag up properly from what I heard. And I heard it was just a big mess in his corner. So I don't know how much that actually affected Holohan. If he wasn't able to make those mid-fight adjustments, or if John Kavanaugh would have done a better job, but yeah, that's kind of something I had heard from behind the scenes. So it's obviously hard to say without speaking to Pat himself how much that affected him, but that's not something you want to hear.
Speaking of TJ Grant, I read your article just a few moments ago before I came on here with you, Mike. And TJ has no timescale yet to make his return to the UFC. At the end there, he said there's no timetable. You know, I still just want to, I can train, but I can't spar. You know, is his career in jeopardy?
I hope not, but it's really scary because we don't know what the deal is with all these concussion issues. I mean, he's waited, I believe it's over 16 months now since his fight, a little over a year since he actually suffered the injury. And who really knows? The brain is such an unknown thing, especially with things like this. Maybe he feels like he feels 100% and then he comes back and do a fight and gets cracked once and he goes back all the way back to day one. So it's really hard to say, but for him, speaking to him personally, he really doesn't like to open up about it. It was pretty hard to get him to come around, yeah. To get to do an interview with me, but the UFC Canada staff was very helpful in setting that up, so I have to thank them for that. And TJ he doesn't really like to talk about it, but he did open up a little bit and just say that he does feel good on some days, but other days he doesn't feel so great. And he just obviously, before committing to a fight, he wants to have all the days be good. So it's really just a matter of time. He doesn't want to rush in there. And I think at this point, that's probably the right decision, because he had the title shot. He lost it. It's clear at this point that whenever he does come back, he's going to have to fight again. So there's no rush. There's no pressure on him to be fighting immediately. Yeah. There's tons of guys in the lightweight division. This isn't like, say, heavyweight or something where one of the top three guys is out and it just leaves a gaping hole because the division's so thin. Lightweight is pretty much the deepest division the UFC has. So there's lots of guys who can fill that number one contender role. And then when TJ is ready to come back, which hopefully is sometime next year, maybe for the Canada show in Montreal, sometime in the first quarter, that's rumored for next year. And hopefully he's ready to get back in there. But right now, I think he's being very smart and not rushing it and just taking his time until he feels good, because really there's no sense in rushing it, because if he does, it'll just come all crashing down. He might have to start from the beginning, or even worse, might have to retire.
Definitely. Yeah. Best wishes, obviously, to TJ. We've spoken to him here on the show before, top man. Rafael Asensio, let's move on to him. Obviously, another winning performance against Brian Caraway. Asensio, you know, he's winning these fights. He's doing enough. He seems to put everything together to get the results and get the W in these fights, but without really making a massive, massive statement. Is he next in line after Dom Cruz for a title shot after that performance?
I think it's all about timing. I'm sure we both know, as well as anyone following the sport really closely, that's a lot of what these title shots and whatnot come down to. So it's really just a matter of when they book the Dillashaw and Cruz fight. If it's maybe like March or something, maybe he does wait. But at the same time, it doesn't really seem like he wants to. I mean, we talked to him before the fight, and he said that he's going to wait for the title shot. His argument was like he was financially secure enough right now that he could afford to take that 8-month, 9-month break without a fight and wait for his shot to come around. But then after the fight, we asked him kind of the similar questions, how he felt. And he was really critical about his performance, even though he defeated Caraway pretty handily, and he said he was just wanting to wait, or he wants to improve his skills and get back in the gym. And he kind of had the attitude of a guy who might know he has to fight again. So I think that might be the case. I think he might have to do one more. It would make all the sense in the world to have him fight Henan Barão,
yeah,
whenever Barão is healthy again. Both those guys are from a similar area in northern Brazil, and I think with the UFC going down there so often, it would make total sense to have them be the main event of like a fight night or something, right around both their hometowns, because I'm sure that would sell a ton of tickets, and the winner of that could be the number one contender. But at the same time, Dominic Cruz is obviously, we know his history with injuries and everything. He obviously made it back, but who knows what could happen at any time. So maybe another direction for Asensio would be to be patient, yeah, and kind of do the Yakare Souza type move and say he's just trained along in case anything happens, so he can be ready to jump at the opportunity if Cruz does go down again and he has the opportunity to step in.
Obviously, Dominic Cruz is going to get that title shot against TJ Dillashaw. How do you ultimately see that going when that does happen?
It's so hard to say, man, because Dominic looked absolutely insane in that comeback fight against Mizugaki. He just tore through him, but it's really difficult to say. Before that, he was known as the guy who just goes 25 minutes and outpoints you by decision, and then he comes in and destroys a guy in 1 minute. So it's really hard to say what, like, is this the new guy he is? Is he going to come out and be able to finish dudes that quickly, or was that kind of just a flash in the pan performance and just all that pent up aggression? And then it's just such a compelling matchup. But right now, if Dominic Cruz is that guy that we saw in his last fight and is still even 90% of the guy he was during his title reign, I think it's hard to pick against him. I think he should be the favorite against Dillashaw, but who knows? Dillashaw is also one of those guys who's very young, develops at an incredible rate every single fight we see him, and I'm sure he's very determined to hold on to his belt, and he's looking great every time out there too. So it's really, I think it's almost a 50-50 fight, but right now, if you're gun to my head making me choose, I'd go with Dominic Cruz.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you there. Just a little sort of side note, it's something I always talk about, and it's much talked about in the mixed martial arts world, especially amongst us media, about the oversaturation of mixed martial arts. Obviously, there was two cards on again on Saturday night, UFC Stockholm, and there was obviously UFC Halifax. What's your opinion on that, Mike? You know, should the UFC just be doing one big card and, you know, better quality fights? I know they suit their markets. But if you look at what happened in the US with that card at the weekend, I believe it was sort of thrown about amongst different Fox channels because of other sporting events not ending on time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It's a tough situation because from the UFC's perspective, if you look at the numbers from Saturday, they had two events, two different continents, mm-hmm. obviously for very different markets. But the show in Sweden had, I believe, 1.1 million gate and around 10,000 attendance. The show in Halifax had, I believe, around 10,000 attendance, $950,000 gate-ish, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah.
So you combine those two together, they had 20,000 fans and almost $2 million at the gate between the two events. That's really good numbers for them, not to mention all the television rights, fight pass, memberships, exactly. all that kind of stuff they're making. So if you're going from the UFC's perspective, is that better than doing one show in somewhere true. That might do, like, you know, 12,000 in attendance and a $1.2 million gate? It's really hard to say. So from that perspective, you can understand, like, why it makes sense for them. But yeah, from a fan and a journalist perspective, it's a lot to keep up with, man. I mean, all these fights, I'm sure, like, we both know, we're like, I don't know how many, watched about 24 fights on Saturday, and that's UFC alone, not to mention the fact we watch Bellator and Battlegrounds exactly. and MFC on Friday and all this stuff going on. It's a ton to keep up with, but I think the UFC, they really have their strategy. It doesn't seem like they're swerving away from it too hard. This seems like it's going to start to become the norm. So I think we just really have to, if you are a person that wants to follow the sport closely, you're going to have to get used to that. But at the same time, they're also making it more and more acceptable for fans to pick and choose the fights they want to watch. And I don't know, you can really argue on either side of the fence of whether or not that's a good thing. I mean, what do you think? Do you think it's a good thing or a bad thing that they're doing this?
It's probably a good thing, to be honest with you. As you mentioned there, it's about suiting your markets. And I think a lot of people over this side of the pond are getting a bit, you know, sort of fed up of not getting the events on their doorstep. And then they tend to complain when they're there. But the hardcore fan's always going to go. But it's about the average sort of fan, the casual fan, you know, accepts these and goes to the event. I think that's what they really need to aim towards. So maybe you'd like to see a little bit stronger cards over here, but as well, they'll have to suit their market. So hopefully we'll get that world title fight here next year anyway. That's what we're all crossing our fingers for. So it'll really shoot into the mainstream, Mike. Moving on a little bit, obviously, Rory McDonald versus Tariq Saffiedine. Rory, another impressive performance. 8-1 in his last 9, I believe he is. Do you think Rory's next in line for a title shot? Surely he is now after that.
Yeah, I think he has to be. I was impressed with what Rory did in there, even though the media who were on the ground in Halifax this week, I think they were all a little down on Rory, just because I'm sure anyone else has followed Rory's career. We know he's not the most charismatic dude who has much personality and he doesn't really seem to do interviews and stuff. But this week in particular, he was really just, I don't know what was wrong. I don't know if he had a really tough weight cut or he was just that focused on the fight or what, but he was just, it was really hard. It was trying to pull blood from a stone talking to him. So that was a bit of a bummer, but I mean, at the same time, he goes in there and he puts on a performance like that. And it's like, does any of all that other stuff even matter? The fact that he isn't in the interviews and stuff when he goes out and can knock out a guy like Tariq Saffiedine in that fashion after pretty much dominating the first two rounds. So to answer your question, I think he's pretty much the only logical guy next in line, especially with the fact that we now know the Hendricks and Lawler fight is happening in December. Yeah. A few weeks ago, I mean, when Rory was probably coming into this fight, that fight wasn't announced. People were just saying, oh, it might happen like February, March, something like that. And if that was the case, maybe he would have to consider taking another fight. But now with it only being, I believe, like 8 weeks away or something, makes total sense for him to wait.
Definitely.
And the winner of that fight, we see him on Twitter now. He's campaigning, like, title shot her bust is his little campaign hashtag and stuff. So if they can do that fight in Canada, it would be great. If not, I think he still is a viable number one contender.
Do you think the UFC, the way that, you know, they've approached Rory and he hasn't sort of progressed as quickly as a lot of people would have thought he was, do you think it's because of he's that type of person, he's that cold sort of stone wall sort of guy? Do you think if he'd a little bit more oomph in his personality, they could have sold him a little bit better and he'd be at that title shot stage by now?
Yeah, for sure. It's not completely that. If he would probably already be there if he didn't suffer that really important loss to Lawler in that key fight. He would have been the one getting that title shot, I imagine, against Hendricks earlier this year. So he did fall short in a key moment that would have pushed him there. But yeah, totally. He's not the most promotable dude in that sense. He's humble, and honestly, I'm from the same province in him as Canada, born and raised, and he's just the most typical kind of dude from that area that you would imagine. There's tons of dudes like that. Not that it's a bad thing or anything, but it's just kind of the personality and attitude of people from that area. They're just really laid back and aren't super outspoken and opinionated, stuff like that. He's just kind of a chill dude who likes to keep to himself. So it's hard. I mean, he's clearly not the next George St. Pierre. He's not that guy that really people were hoping he would be. He's not going to be that level of Canadian star who's sponsored by Under Armour and all these crazy things. But he's an incredibly talented fighter. He, as we can see, he beats down pretty much all the guys he fights. And it depends what you value as a fan. If you really only care about what they do inside the cage, Rory McDonald should be your guy. But if you care about really the whole package, he's a little tough to really clinch onto, because he doesn't give you much in terms of just getting to know him as a person. So it would be interesting to see how the UFC would go about promoting him if he were to become the champion. But right now, I don't know. It's a really interesting story to follow, because he is almost more interesting in a way because he is how he is. But in the other way, it's not. For us media who are trying to interview him and write stories and stuff, it's not very helpful.
Exciting guy in the world, that's for sure. But looking at the welterweight division, obviously we Gunnar Nelson lose on Saturday night, a big upset from my opinion and a lot of people over here. I'm not sure how you feel about that, Mike. I was sure he was going to get the victory over Rick Story. How surprised, first of all, were you with that?
I was very surprised. I picked Gunnar Nelson to win. I thought he was gonna make pretty quick work of Story. I thought it was maybe gonna be similar to the Damian Maia fight, something like that, where he just gets taken down pretty quick and gets his back taken and choked out. But Rick looked great in that one. I mean, it's an interesting fight. Obviously, if Gunnar can get him down, that's when we knew it was gonna become really more of a curious piece of strategy from him, and he really couldn't just get anything going. Story's just one of those guys. He's a grinder. He's in your face, and we know Gunnar hasn't really fought that kind of grinding American wrestler who's just hard nosed, is going to keep coming forward no matter what you hit him with. And those are really the guys that seem to be the kryptonite when these other guys from even Brazil, Europe, anywhere, who aren't didn't come up through the American wrestling system, they really struggle when they first face that challenge. But now that Gunnar has faced that, he knows what, I'm sure he's going to learn a ton with it. He kind of even had some really strong reflections about his performance in his post-fight interview. I think it's going to be a good thing for him going forward. But yeah, I was surprised with Story's performance, but I was even more surprised that one of the judges scored it for Gunnar Nelson.
That was just insane. We won't talk about the Swedish Mixed Martial Arts Federation, or we'll be here all night. They're a bit of a mockery. We saw what happened with Cage Warriors Fighting Championships there recently. Obviously, Tariq Saffiedine lost to Rory McDonald, and Gunnar Nelson lost. Is that a potential matchup, Mike, next for both those guys? Because it's one I sort of liked possibly beforehand. I would have actually originally liked that fight instead of the two we saw on Saturday night.
Yeah, that is. I hadn't really thought about what they were going to do next with the two guys who lost there. But yeah, I really like that fight. Hopefully, Tariq Saffiedine takes a little time off. Yeah. He was saying when we talked to him at the post-fight press conference that he was going to be back in the gym on Monday, which is not something you want to hear 5 minutes after a guy gets knocked out. Hopefully, he is on suspension and is not training, but I imagine he won't care about that. But that's a whole other issue. Yeah, I'd really like to see that fight. I think it'd be interesting. Tariq's another striker with strong takedown defense that if Gunnar couldn't get him to the ground, it would be another challenging night for him to kind of work around that puzzle. But if he does get to the ground, Tariq's also good down there. So it would be interesting to see if Gunnar could submit him. But really, it's hard to say, because that does seem like a logical bit of matchmaking from the UFC. And it's weird how they will do match a guy up like Gunnar with someone like Rick Story, who was fringe top 10 or top 15, and then he'll lose and they'll almost put him in a more difficult fight. And that's totally something I could see them doing. And I think that would be a perfectly logical matchup. And I do like that one.
In many ways, is it a blessing in disguise for Gunnar Nelson to lose that fight to a guy of the esque and the way Rick Story fights.
Yeah, totally. Those guys, I think everyone needs to go through that fight. I mean, it wasn't really one of those fights where he was planted on his back, like a John Fitch, Jake Shield fight or something, where he was just planted there and like couldn't even get his jiu-jitsu game off something. There's a lot of positive things for Gunnar to take away from that fight, but he was just fighting a guy who was insanely experienced. I mean, this was Rick Story's 17th UFC fight, and he's been in there with pretty much all the best guys, and he's had mixed results in those fights, but he beat Johnny Hendricks, man. Like, he's a good fighter, so there's nothing, Gunnar should not be ashamed or anything. He's still incredibly young in the game. This is only his fifth UFC fight, and he's a guy that, as long as he cares enough about the sport to excel and come back and do better, that he's got the right training environment, the right training partners, and the skills to come back. And in no way should people be writing him off as like a future champion or future contender or any of that stuff. He's still got a lot of time to make that stuff happen.
Definitely. And just a couple more bits before we wrap it up. Mike, I just want to ask you about Conor McGregor. I saw a piece on MMA Junkie while I was reading your article there early on about TJ Grant. Other fighters' perception of Conor McGregor. And is there a Canadian perception? Obviously yourself, we spoke a little bit before we came on air about Conor McGregor. I know you think very highly of him. Is there a fan sort of reaction or assessment of Conor McGregor over in Canada?
I mean, I think it's kind of the same as what you'd see in the States or maybe anywhere else in the world. People can get behind the kind of the brash attitude and just everything Conor McGregor is about at this point. But they still want to see him prove it in the cage. They want to see him get that title fight. But I don't think Dana White came out and said that he thinks Conor, if Aldo wins, might be the next guy in line. And I don't think people were too outraged about that. They just want to know if this guy's as good as he says he is. Because we over here, I mean, the American, North American audience, we love that brash personality, you guys who come out and tell you what they want or what they're going to do. But what we like even more than that is a guy who comes out there and actually does it. So if he can put this together, I see him being a pretty big star in North America. Is he going to be bigger than Brock Lesnar, bigger than George St. Pierre, like Dana White declares him to be? I don't know. I don't think so. But he's definitely a guy who can be a very big moneymaker for the UFC in the future, especially in Europe and over here if he keeps winning and takes the belt.
But one thing I want to put to you before we talk about that fight. Obviously, the UFC are flying Conor McGregor over to Brazil to be cage side at that fight. I have this theory, Mike. I don't know whether you're going to go along with it now or not. We've heard Jose say, you know, he wants to move up to lightweight eventually. You know, the weight cut's tough for him. Is there a possibility we could be looking at win, lose, or draw Jose Aldo vacating the title and possibly the UFC announcing the winner of Cub Swanson versus Frankie Edgar versus Conor McGregor, or, you know, Mendez versus McGregor if Mendez was to win?
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. I'm not really sure, because who knows what those Nova Uniao guys are thinking. It's such a closed door situation down there. No one really, like, how bad is the weight cuts really? We know that that gym kind of has a starting to build a reputation of maybe not taking care of their guys the best way in terms of cutting weight. And although if he has another few bad cuts, maybe he'll just give up, or maybe he'll keep pushing through it. I don't know. I have a difficult time seeing him, if he wins, just upright saying like, see ya, and just dropping the belt and walking off and going up to another weight class. I think that's he had that opportunity before. They really wanted to push that fight with Pettis, and he basically said no, he wasn't down for it. So I don't know. He's the only person that could answer that question, and we'll kind of have to see how he performs and what happens after that fight. But I think in theory, that seems like a super good plan. I mean, if he does leave, that would make all the sense in the world to have him fight Edgar or Swanson. So I think that's a good plan, but it's really just a matter of time to see what happens. But yeah, I'm curious to see what they do with McGregor, and especially if Aldo or Mendez win.
Do you think Conor's being brought over to be announced for a title shot?
It's hard to say, because I believe Ariel Helwani of MMA Fighting made this point when he said they had Cub Swanson over in Ireland sitting cage side for McGregor's fight with Brandao, and those two guys didn't end up fighting. So the UFC does this stuff sometimes. They'll bring fighters to different locations and just to get them publicized. Conor's never been to Brazil, and clearly he's a guy that wherever the people take him, the media are going to want to talk to him. and get interviews. So maybe that's their strategy. Maybe they know this is the featherweight title fight, his division. Let's get him in, because they know if they put Conor in front of a microphone a few days before that fight, he's going to talk all kinds of crap about Aldo and Mendez, and he's going to drop multiple headlines about the fight, saying this and that, I can beat both the guys, and just whatever he says. So it's a good way to promote the fight within Brazil from another angle. But I think it would make, like, if it Aldo does win, why not have him announce him as the winner, or him fighting the winner of that fight? It would make sense. He's down there, and Dana White's kind of already preempted it and saying that he is next in line. So I think it's just a matter of how it all plays out. But regardless, it makes sense to have him down there, and he's just going to it's only going to benefit the fight and the event in the big picture and Conor's image in Brazil.
Definitely. And just one last one, obviously Aldo Mendes. You know, who wins that fight? Obviously, we've seen Chad Mendes. He's improved a lot since UFC 142. Is he a legitimate threat to Jose Aldo's crown?
I think so. I think he has to be. He's improved a lot, clearly, under that Alpha Male team with working with Dwayne and all that, and now with Martin Kampman and whatnot. I think he is a legitimate threat, but it's so hard to say. I mean, Aldo has just been in the UFC. I also want to call him a disappointment. His fights are just, he's so dominant, but he seems like he just doesn't, I want to say he doesn't care, but he's just more concerned with holding on to the belt than getting those devastating highlight reel knockouts we saw early in his WEC career. And he's just, seems like he's content. It doesn't seem like Aldo has, since the first fight, I would say Chad Mendes has improved more, at least it seemed that way. It seems like Aldo's almost like stuck in that rut where he's just got his leg kick and his straight punches and his jab and whatnot that he can, and his takedown defense that he can use to beat 95% of the guys. I mean, that Ricardo Lamas fight wasn't particularly impressive to me, even though he completely dominated from pillar to post. And so for that, if he gets too content here, coming with a guy like Mendez, who he's already beat, so I think in that way it already takes a bit of a fighter's motivation fighting a guy you've already beat. And we know Mendez is going to come in here and he's going to want to knock his head off and get that revenge. He's pissed that he has to go down and fight this fight in Brazil again, especially when it was supposed to be in LA, close to his hometown, and Aldo pulled out. So I think Mendez he's really got a ton of form going into this fight. He's clearly insanely motivated. He's improved a ton. He's got the knockout power. So I think he's very capable of defeating Aldo, but it's a whole different ballgame when you get in the cage with that dude, especially in Brazil with all this stuff going on. So I don't really, it's hard to say. I think I need to think about before making an official prediction, but in no way do I think Chad Mendes doesn't have chances here. I think he has a way greater chance than he did in the first fight.
Mike Bond, as always, from MMAJunkie.com. Where can the guys catch you on Twitter? I think it's at Mike Bond MMA, isn't that correct?
Yes, sir. You can follow me on Twitter at Mike Bond MMA and read me at MMA Junkie and USA Today Sports.
Excellent. Always a pleasure to have you on, Mike. Really do appreciate the time.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
So there was Mike Bond again. Big thanks to Mike for joining me on the show this week. Absolutely cracking mixed martial arts journalist. So do check out his work on MMAJunkie.com and USA Today. He's like a stato of mixed martial arts. Comes up with these crazy, crazy stats, which are, you know, really impressive. I don't know where he pulls them out of, how he thinks them, but really, really good stuff from Mike, as always. Big thanks to him. Yeah, I don't know about that point I made earlier on to Mike. Jose Aldo possibly relinquishing his featherweight crown. That's just something, you know, he struggled with weight. We've Nova and Yao with their massive weight cut problems over the last year, especially Henan Barreau, and there's been numerous fighters in their camp, you know, who've been struggling with weight issues. So it's going to be interesting to see what does happen in Brazil in 2 weeks' time. See if Conor McGregor gets that title shot, or what Jose Aldo does, or how he performs against Chad Mendes. It's going to be really, really interesting. I do think Chad has a better chance than people are letting on. The guy has just improved so much in the stand-up under Dwayne Ban Ludwig, and it's going to be a lot more of a challenge, I think, for Jose Aldo this time than it was at UFC. I think it was 146, I think it was, I said to Mike there earlier on. So it's really, really exciting times ahead. And looking back at that Canada card as well, I really enjoyed it. Obviously, a tough loss for Paddy. Might have missed John possibly in his corner a little bit. But, you know, you have to look at Rory McDonald's really good performance. Does deserve his title shot. Glad to see he's got it now. And that division is absolutely stacked. Going to be interesting to see what happens with Tariq Safadin. I mentioned there to Mike, and I'm going to put that now to Sebastian Martinez in a few minutes' time, about possibly a Gunnar Nelson-Tariq Safadin fight. I really like that fight. I'd like to see that fight happen. It's one I've mentioned in the past if you're listening to the show here. I would have liked to see it happen at UFC Dublin, but obviously it didn't. So maybe that's one that the UFC are going to possibly look at in the coming months. Great performance, obviously, from Rafael Assunção on that card, defeated Brian Caraway. Another victory. You know, he just doesn't really, you know, you can't deny a guy who's on the streak that he's on. He's on a, like an 8-fight win streak. So you can't deny a guy like that a title shot, but it's just the manner in which, you know, he really doesn't, there's no real definitive statement in his performance, I don't think. I think he just does enough to get things done. We could see a little bit more from him. I'd like to see a little bit more from him, but I'd like to see the Henan Barea matchup first before he gets a title shot. But let's see what happens in that bantamweight division. Very impressed as well with Chad Laprise, Teodoro, and Mitch Gagnon yet again. Some really good fights on that card. I really did enjoy it. And Oben Mercier as well. I think he's one to definitely watch out for from the TriStar Gym in Canada. Obviously, he was a runner-up on TUF Nations this year. Okay, just before we get to talk about the UFC Sweden card, you can obviously hit me up on Twitter. I'm at Niall McGrath 4. You can catch the website on Twitter at TBMMADOTCOM. And you can catch us, the radio network on Talking Brawls, at Talking Brawls. Joe has a new show out as well. You should really check that out. He's had some great guests on in the last couple of weeks, including Zach Arnold, who's obviously a big man on the Japanese MMA scene. It's going to be, you know, focused on a lot of the business side of mixed martial arts, and also it's going to focus on, you know, the past, the glory days of mixed martial arts, you know, on the continent and in Japan and places like that. So it's really, really interesting stuff. He had Stephen Quadras on, former Pride commentator and also Glory commentator and actor as well. So a jack of all trades there. So really, really good stuff from Joe. So do check that out. That's on SoundCloud. You can catch it on our website as well. I think it's under the blogs, Talking Brawls blog. You'll get that in on the website. Soon to be up on iTunes. And Joe's back with a new episode. I think next week we're going to get that going. It's been a little bit all over the place the last couple of weeks with people being away and me obviously being over in Las Vegas at 178. So do bear with us with that. But great stuff from Joe all the same. And Keith obviously writing some cracking articles on the website. So do check out our stuff on the website and get in contact with us if you want any issues discussed. Okay, UFC Sweden took place last Saturday night. Could be a blessing in disguise for Gunnar. This defeat, you know, you learn a lot more from defeats than you do from victories a lot of the time. You learn more about yourself. And it's the type of guy, I think, that, you know, he will take that on board and improve himself and get back to that level, which I really do believe. I've often predicted in the past, I believe he's going to be the world champion a year. It might take a little longer than that now, but, you know, I'd love to see that fight with Gunnar Nelson and Tarek Saffiedine, as I've mentioned earlier on. But very, very good performance from Rick Story all the same, albeit with the split decision. I don't know how one of the judges got that on his scorecard, but that's the Swedish Mixed Martial Arts Federation. They haven't covered themselves in glory in the last number of months, obviously, with the Cage Warriors debacle, which we'll talk about in a moment time. So let's welcome into the show now Sebastian Wendel Martinez from MMA Nytt in Sweden. Obviously, he was there at the card in Stockholm at the weekend in the Globe. And Sebastian, first of all, great to have you on the show. How you been keeping, my friend?
I'm fine. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. Sebastian, obviously the card at the weekend, there was a lot of unsold tickets for the event in the Globe, and I think there was just over 10,000 sold. What was the public perception going into this card on Saturday night?
It was mixed. Obviously, there's a lot of fans that are just happy to have the UFC in Sweden. I mean, there's countries like France, for example, and Spain and other very big countries that don't get the luxury of having a UFC event at all. So there are plenty of fans who were happy for that and who were defending the card, saying, well, this is awesome. We get to see a bunch of our own, you know, yeah, Swedish fighters taking on a bunch of fighters from around the world. Then there were quite a few fans as well that were disappointed with the card. They were perhaps hoping for a little bit more star power, a few more well-established names, and a card that wasn't just what they might have seen as patronizing, just, you know, simply appealing. We'll throw a bunch of Swedish fighters on the card and then people come. And then there was a small minority who thought that this was the worst thing since ISIS. So overall, a very mixed bag.
Card was really entertaining itself. We had a night full of, you know, crazy knockouts and finishes in the fights. What was the reaction of the fans and the media like over in Stockholm?
Well, I'd say that the fans certainly enjoyed the first two fights, two first-round knockouts, and fighters that were, they didn't really have any feelings towards. The later knockouts got a bit of a different perception, though. I mean, I'm sure most people noticed watching the broadcast that the crowd booed Mike Wilkinson after knocking out Nicklas Bäckström. And admittedly, I saw most of the fights from the media room. But the little that I did get to see inside, it seemed like the mood did start dying a little bit for some of the Swedish fans the longer the night went.
Yeah, and it wasn't a great night, obviously, for the Swedish guys. We saw Nicklas Bäckström, a lot of upsets on the card. Nicklas Bäckström lost, a guy that UFC have really been trying to promote on the EMEA scene. You know, how damaging is that for the UFC's, you know, marketability of guys in Sweden with the amount of losses on the card of the Scandinavian fighters?
Well, short term, and now I'm talking very short term, it's bad because obviously this was a card that did lack the biggest star of Sweden, Alexander Gustafsson, and it was mostly relying on victories from Ilir Latifi and Nicklas Bäckström to build these new stars. I heard some jokes about, you know, all stars now being one star, and it's, you know, obviously it does have an impact, but then at the same time, all of the Swedish fighters who lost, I would say, have great potential. I mean, Bäckström is still very young, and you can't really, I know there was a bit of a controversy with his behavior afterwards, but I mean, he's a very young, passionate fighter, and obviously he's got talent, something we saw in his UFC debut. You know, Latifi, I think, is very underrated as well, very just a beast, and he can either threat to, I think, anyone in the division on the right night. So I'd say long-term, it won't damage the overall view of Swedish MMA, because let's face it, Swedish MMA will exist one day without Alexander Gustafsson as well.
Definitely. And obviously, one of the major talking points of the night were a couple of the stoppages, and in one of the other fights, I can't remember offhand what fight it was now, the referee made the guy stand up ridiculously on a number of occasions. We obviously know about the Cage Warriors debacle with the Swedish Mixed Martial Arts Federation. What was your assessment of the refereeing and the stoppages in, obviously, we had the Bäckström fight and the Max Holloway fight against Akira Korosani?
Well, displeasure to say the least. I mean, in the case of Bäckström, Bobby Rehman is, in my opinion, a very good referee. Yeah. He just happened to be standing a bit further away than perhaps ideal in this case. He did get over as fast as possible, but unfortunately there was enough time for Wilkinson to throw down some extra strikes. In the case of Akira, it's not quite as forgiving in terms of a referee. And in the fight you were talking about, Nicklas Bäckström against Scott Askham, that was, I believe, Mark Goddard refereeing, who's a very established guy. And, I mean, you could make an argument that perhaps it was just a unlucky night. You know, all referees mess up. Big John McCarthy, Herb Dean, the best in the business, will have a bad night. And sure, it's possible that just a couple of referees and perhaps point judges as well had a bad night. But then again, it would be naive to think that it could all be, it's all just coincidence.
Mm. And what's your opinion? What's the media's opinion in Sweden of the Swedish Mixed Martial Arts Federation? Obviously, we had that ridiculous scenario with Cage Warriors fighting championships, that card that had to be moved on 2 weeks' notice. You know, what's your opinion and what's your feeling towards the Mixed Martial Arts Federation?
Well, it's important to remember that MMA in Sweden is still young and not at all as widely accepted as, say, in the UK. Still, every single event that the UFC brings to Sweden, there's always tons of very harsh articles in big newspapers of people saying that it should be banned, and there's still a lot of resistance in that sense. And it's not a popular opinion, but in the end of the day, what the Swedish Mixed Martial Arts Federation is trying to do is try to keep MMA in Sweden, which is why, in the case of Cage Warriors, they were trying to abide by these guidelines that they have, which state that fighters must be on a UFC level. What constitutes a UFC level? Being in the UFC. Now, these are obviously guidelines that were started many, many years ago, and that unfortunately hadn't been reassessed in the right way to adapt more to the modern martial arts scene. Now, hopefully that's something that we're going to see in the future, because there have been some changes. Personally, it's a little hard to weigh in on how I feel, because I do know a lot of people in this business. My own personal head coach at Frontier MMA was one of the people who stepped down, and there's a lot of people talking, a lot of rumors. But there's still not enough time to see just sort of what this new Swedish SMAF is going to do. And in the case of this night, people are displeased, and we're expecting to talk to them shortly and get their take on it. And we did actually during the week of the UFC interview SMAF as well about the Cage Warriors deal.
Yeah.
And basically, all we can right now is wait for more secure information.
Okay. Yeah. Just moving on to the fights themselves. Obviously, a fight where a lot of people thought Gunnar Nelson was going to get the victory against Rick Story, but it played out quite comprehensively, in my opinion, to Rick Story. Where can you see Gunnar go from here? It could be a blessing in disguise that he possibly lost that fight in the way he lost the fight as well.
That's a very, very good point. I mean, obviously, this was shocking to say the least. The very vast majority of media and fans were picking Nelson to win, and it's unfortunate also that some of the judging controversy and all this sort of and all the hype of the Gunnar Nelson is taking away from his victory, because honestly he did fight the perfect fight to beat, who was, you know, until then unbeaten. But I do like and agree with your point on this maybe being a very good thing for Nelson, because let's face it, you do learn more from a loss than you do from a win.
Yeah.
And if he's able to sort of fix some of those holes in his game and work on perhaps more offensive wrestling, or, you know, obviously he's an extremely good grappler, so that's almost a bit of an insult to say, but basically just putting together all those aspects of MMA, this could be a very good experience for him.
Definitely. And I was speaking to Mike Bond of MMA Junkie earlier on, and I put the point to Mike, possibly Tariq Saffiedine is coming off a loss to Rory McDonald. Is that a fight you potentially like to see, you know, Gunnar and Tariq go at it in the octagon? Because it's one I've mentioned before that I would have liked to see him possibly before this fight.
That's great matchmaking, I'll tell you that. I'd watch that fight. I'm not sure if the UFC, however, are as interested in making it, because I think they might want to build these two fighters
separately.
Up a bit separately.
Yeah.
I get the impression that they have different plans for them, and that putting them against each other could potentially set them back to a point where it's hard to build them up to the same status. But, I mean, I'll tell you this much, I would love to see that fight.
Definitely, man, definitely. Looking at another guy in the card who's been on a roll lately, obviously Max Holloway, another great performance against Akira Korasani, although we've talked about the stoppage, we won't get into that anymore. But this guy's on a roll. Surely it's a top 10, 15 opponent now for Max Holloway next.
I think so. I mean, my personal pick, on our site, we do, you know, staff picks for how we can match him in the future. I'd personally like to see him against Dennis Seaver, who also won him a card. I'd say that's an established top 10 opponent who's been around, and in my opinion, is a good test for Holloway. If not Seaver, then, I think it's time to set him up against someone who's higher ranked. I mean, he's managed four straight finishes in a very competitive division with tons of upsets.
Yeah.
So the fact that he's been able to string together four straight victories and in such spectacular fashion, I think definitely grants him a shot at a top 10 opponent.
And just moving further down the card, obviously, we our own interest here, we had Kyle Pendard fighting, obviously fights at SBG Dublin here in Ireland. What was your assessment of Kyle's performance? It's a very tight fight.
It was, and as I'm sure you know, when you're doing interviews backstage, you know, you'll miss a lot of fights, and you'll end up sort of being in the middle of an interview and sort of in the corner of your eye trying to watch the fight on the monitor. So, I mean, you know, I did, however, get to see at least two rounds of that fight, and I just remember it being close and just not being sure. But to be completely honest, I was just a couple percent more in, leaning towards Gaston Amiratov, actually.
Yeah. No, there was a lot of controversy. It could have gone either way, in my opinion. I scored it, obviously, just slightly to Kyle, but but okay. Moving on, obviously, Conor McGregor, a name that, you know, I know you were asked over there. You know what you think of Conor? You think he's the real deal? What's the Swedish perception of Conor McGregor as a title contender in the featherweight division?
I'd say, I mean, people are excited. Love him or hate him, he's news over here as well. I mean, there's a lot of people who think that he's too cocky, but they're reading everything about him. And then there's a lot of people who definitely think that he's nearing the top, but I'm just not sure that at least the Swedish perception is that he is ready for a title fight, because I do think that, and this is perhaps, again, a little bit biased on account of him being of half-Swedish descent, but I think a lot of people think that Cub Swanson and Frankie Edgar are more deserving. And I'm just not sure if they're all completely sold on McGregor, on just simply on account of the types of fighters that he's been put up against. The fact that he hasn't ever really met a solid wrestler, right, for example. And I think people are questioning if he could defeat a fighter like, say, Ricardo Lamas or Chad Mendes. Mm. But whether or not they're ready to see him fight for the title, they are definitely ready to see him fight.
Do you think, you know, there's been a lot of rumors here in Ireland and obviously in the mixed martial arts world that Conor is going to be announced as the next title contender. He flies over to Brazil and he's going to be cage-sided at Chad Mendes and Jose Aldo. Do you think that's going to happen on Saturday night? We're going to know who's going to be the next title challenger for that UFC featherweight belt.
Well, in some ways it wouldn't surprise me, because I think we all know that the UFC are definitely sold on Conor McGregor, and let's face it, he is a star. I mean, he's extremely talented, and people will definitely buy that pay-per-view. And let's not forget, in the end of the day, the UFC is a company, and in the long run, we're looking at pay-per-views as well. I don't know how well-received it would be by sort of international standards from the fans. I think some people might see it as undeserved, but if we're going to see it, I think it's going to be one of the biggest pieces of news coming out in recent times.
Definitely. And ultimately, what's your prediction for that fight against Jose Aldo against Chad Mendes? Do you think we're going to see an improved version of Chad Mendes from the one we saw at UFC 142?
I think we will, and I'll be honest, I'm torn. For me, this is a pick'em fight, because I truly do think it could go either way. I think that Chad Mendes has developed at an enormous rate ever since that loss. And then there was, of course, a controversy of the cage grabbing.
Of course. Yeah.
And on the flip side, this is perhaps just me personally, but I haven't really been as impressed of Jose Aldo as I have of Chad Mendes lately. Yeah. I have perhaps had higher, or I definitely have had higher expectations of Aldo, but I just don't always see that constant improvement that I have with Chad Mendes. Still, though, there's a reason Jose Aldo is number one, and there's a reason he's been beating the best fighters in the world for several years now. But I am actually probably going to make my mind up at the weigh-ins when I see who just has that killer instinct in their eye.
I think everyone's the same way in that fight for some reason. I was speaking to Mike Bond from MMA Junkie earlier on, and he said exactly the same thing. He couldn't make his mind up either, and I'm more or less on the same sort of level as you guys. Well, I can't really make my mind up as well. You take a lot of consideration, obviously, with Chad Mendes working under Dwayne Bang, and he's improved his striking. He's taken to the next level again. So it's going to be a really interesting fight in Saturday. But just one final one, Sebastian, before we let you go. In the next year for Swedish mixed martial arts, you know, what do you think you're going to see in Sweden? Are we going to see a potential world title fight? What's your prediction for the UFC coming back to Sweden next year?
Well, I think that the UFC might take star power into consideration for the next time. I think that they noticed that Swedish MMA fans are educated, and they're not just about seeing Swedish fighters, about seeing top-notch, you know, the best in the business, which is what the UFC is, you know, caters to us. And this might come as a surprise to a lot of people, but when Akira Korsani was originally scheduled to fight Chan Sung Jung, and I'd say that a lot of Swedish fans were much more excited to see a Korean zombie.
Yeah.
And which just goes to show you that perhaps a little bit more star power, say that of a Michael Bisping, a Stefan Struve, an Alistair Overeem, a European fighter who does who is a bit more recognized than, say, Gunnar Nelson. All respect to him, you know, of course he's a huge talent, but not as big of an established name.
Mm.
So I think that the UFC will take that in consideration. I do think they were a little bit disappointed not being able to sell out Globen and, you know, actually having 4,000 seats shy and actually seeing parts of the arena sort of blocked off. It was a bit different from the first UFC event, just, you know, from a fan perspective as well. It didn't feel quite as grand in some way. And on a personal note, I'm hoping that the UFC reconsiders what may just be a rumor about the idea of going south and having the event in my hometown of Malmo, where Ilir Latifi is from as well. I mean, people down here in the south, we're just not tougher. We're, you know, in the south, we've always been very fighting. We've had a big high boxing scene down here as well. And I'd say the south of Sweden, being close to Germany, being close to Denmark, you bring tons of fans.
Yeah.
And that's something I'm personally looking forward to. And I think the UFC will be pleasantly surprised if we do decide to do so.
Do you think, there was obviously, we believe that Gothenburg Arena show for Gustafsson Jones was a lot closer than people have led on. It was actually closer to happening than we were made to believe. Do you think that's a possibility if John Jones loses his belt to Alexander Gustafsson, that they'll go back to Sweden and do a stadium show with Alexander Gustafsson headlining?
Well, I mean, presuming that Gustafsson beats him and that he at that point does become a champion and he does have that UFC champion status, yes, I think so. I think that they will reconsider the whole pay-per-view idea. They might perhaps have the event on slightly earlier or perhaps slightly later. They may very well do something like that in order to cater slightly more to the North American time zone. But I think they'll be open to it because they've seen how big of a draw Gustafsson is here, and they've seen that he's drawing not just here but around the world after his fight with John Jones. I mean, I'd say his fan base doubled, if not tripled, from that fight. Will they be willing to go here wholeheartedly, 100%? No, I think they'll definitely have some reservations about the time differences and the idea of pay-per-views. Of course. But I'd say there's a... I mean, if this Gothenburg Stadium event is as close as they say, then obviously Gustafsson being the champion would make that even more certain.
Definitely. Sebastian Martinez, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. Really do appreciate the time. Where can the guys find you on social networks?
On Facebook, it's just Sebastian Wendel-Martinez. Twitter, it's MMA Nit Seb, all one word. And those are pretty much the only social media that I have the energy for.
And they can catch you on, obviously, MMANit.se.
That's right, MMANit.se. Check it out. We're always writing stuff, putting up video.
Sebastian, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. Really do appreciate your time and your insight.
Anytime, buddy.
And big thanks again to Sebastian Wendel-Martinez from MMANjut.se in Sweden, taking the time out to look back at the card. I hope you enjoyed the show this week. A few more things, obviously, before we wrap it up, but it's just been more of a review show this week. I'll be back on Sunday night. Definitely going to be back on Sunday night this time. I was sick last weekend. I know I promised to do a live show, but we're going to be back with a live show, myself and Fergus O'Farrell, and hopefully Andrew will be back with me on the podcast next week. Andrew McGann from SevereMMA.com. So looking forward to all that good stuff. But just a few little bits that broke last night. We'd Hoist Gracie is joining Bellator as an ambassador for their promotion. The UFC Hall of Famer. That's not going to go down too well with Dana White. It's going to be interesting to see what Dana has to say about that in the next couple of weeks. And obviously, since we haven't been on air as well, Kung Lee has tested positive for his loss against Michael Bisping for human growth hormone. He was taking that, and I think all those pictures have been pretty much justified. I think it's the most obvious thing ever we've ever seen in mixed martial arts, the way his body changed in a matter of months. And just going back a little bit further, obviously Dominic Cruz with a smashing performance against Takeo Mizugaki, finishing him in the very first round, 1 minute and 1 second. So he's going to get a title shot. Also, Kat Zingano has been promised a title shot from Dana White after she came back through a little bit of adversity in the first round and nearly actually got finished by Amanda Nunes, but came back and won. And great performance from her after a really, really tough year for her. And obviously, Donald Cerrone and Eddie Alvarez, that was some scrap. But it's going to be interesting to see what both guys do next. Obviously, Donald's knocking on the door now for a title shot. Got to speak to him before the fight. Both guys, actually, before the fight. So there's plenty of matchups to make for those. I'll be back on Sunday with a live show this weekend. Probably going to be about 9:30, 10 p.m. Say, stay posted on the website on talkingbrawlsmma.com and also on Twitter for details of that. You can catch us on Twitter at TBMMADOTCOM, at Talking Brawls, and I'm at Niall McGrath 4. So I'll be announcing, obviously, a guest that we're going to have join us on Sunday night. And we'll be just talking, obviously, there's not a card for a couple of weeks, so we'll be just talking about what's been going on the week. There's plenty of talk to get through. There's been plenty of things happening, as I've mentioned a few of them there. And also we've Bellator on this Friday night, so we'll probably have a look back at that. Michael Venom Page back in the cage, the Englishman who's been on a tear in Bellator, so looking forward to that fight on Friday night. And also Michael Chandler versus Will Brooks, really looking forward to that one. Two absolutely smashing lightweights, so that's going to be a barn burner of a fight on Friday night. You can also catch this if you want to listen to the show, as you well know if you're listening now. You can catch us obviously on iTunes, on the website. You can catch us on Stitcher and on TuneIn Radio. Plenty of platforms for you to listen in on your mobile or whatever device you need to listen to Talking Brawls MMA.com podcast on. And as I mentioned, do check out Joe's show. It's some great stuff off the Brawl podcast. You get that on Talking Brawls blog and soon to be up on iTunes and other platforms as well, as I'll be announcing in the next couple of weeks. Big thanks obviously to my two buddies, Mike Bond, good good friend of mine now, and obviously Sebastian Martinez, known from the EMEA scene, a great Swedish mixed martial arts journalist. And big thanks to those guys for joining me on the show today, and do check out their work and do hit them up on social networks to get their content. Absolutely great insight from boat cards, obviously, in Canada and Sweden. And big thanks to you for listening again. Always do appreciate you taking the time out to stop in and listen to TalkingBrawlsMMA.com podcast. So yeah, we're not back. We don't have another UFC card for a couple of weeks, but loads of Cage Warrior stuff coming up in the next number of weeks. We 73 and 74, two absolutely stacked cards. We Stevie Ray, Kurt Warburton, Joseph Duffy's back in the octagon. We've two really stacked cards from Cage Warriors, so do stay posted on the website for previews, coverage, and on the podcast, obviously, for we'll be talking to a few of the guys in the coming weeks. Dalby is obviously going to defend his title for the first time at Cage Warriors Fighting Championships 74, and we've the lightweight title bout between Stevie Ray and Kurt Warburton, part three, which is going to be a great, great fight again. So loads to look forward to in the coming weeks. So, yeah. And yeah, just a shout out, Johnny Schrager from the mixmartialarts.com, the MMA Underground, got some great videos up with some just behind the scenes sort of stuff with coaches and things like that over in Las Vegas. Had a few beers with Johnny over there. Good crack, good guy. Big United fan like myself. But some great content from him, so do check him out on mixmartialarts.com. I'm sure if you're a mixed martial arts fan, you'll know the MMA Underground is he plenty of video coverage from over there, so do check out some of those interviews. So hopefully Andrew will be back with us next week. The regular podcast here on TalkingBrawlsMMA.com, but I'll be back, obviously, as I mentioned, on Sunday night with Fergus O'Farrell from Setanta MMA to do the live show, guest to be confirmed, as I mentioned. So do stay with us on the website and on social networks to see who will be joining us. Obviously, Paul Feller joined us last time, and Paul had a great win on Saturday night. Decision victory, dominant performance from the Irish Dragon, Paul Feller. So, guys, as always, do appreciate you taking the time out to listen to the show this week. So, from Niall McGrath, it's good luck and good night. Cheers.